Hey, this is Matt, and I'm building some custom doors in Forest Park, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you, Matt. Making custom doors. It's a good hobby to have, or profession, if that's your jam. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. This is show number 769. And what we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. You can dial us up on the old Twitters. At Outside the Loop is the Twitter handle. On Instagram, at Outside the Loop Radio. On Facebook as well. And download the podcast of the program. It is free, gets delivered to your device if you subscribe to it. You can go to Spotify, you can go to Apple Podcasts, wherever. Download the podcast for free. And OutsideTheLoopRadio.com and WGNRadio.com, the websites if you want to stream the audio archives. Bob Ferguson is in the studio today. He is our engineer. And Colin Seaman is the producer of the show, on location producing, not from your house. Where are you, Colin?
I'm on the hand, Mike. If I reverse it, I think I'm on the, like, in between the pinky and the ring finger. That's where I am.
So you're up in the Traverse City area, I'm guessing.
Yes. Leland Isle County.
How's it going?
It's nice. It's been completely two different trips or two different, I don't know, the weather situations. We got here, it was real hot. Storm came right through, and now it's, I don't know if it's fall time. It's like been 60s and 70s these last 2 days.
Yeah.
Still doesn't mean you can't get out there and do things. The water, though, a little cold, but we push on. Kids certainly don't care that the water is 67 degrees. They go in.
Yes. You know, we had the same experience in Wisconsin, just north of the Dells. We got there earlier in the week for the 4th of July, and it was 91 degrees. And then by the time we left, it was 61 degrees. So, yeah, the kids don't care. They want to do stuff. They want to be entertained. They want to play. And, Colin, I'm... this is... We talked about this back in September. You and I love bars, and you know we have segments here where we profile bars with the Winter Tavern Tour, and we love local taverns. It's a great piece of the fabric of Chicagoland. And last year, back in September, we reported that Southport Lanes was shutting down. Southport Lanes, the bar at 3325 North Southport Avenue in Chicago, in the Lakeview neighborhood, and it's such a great place. It's one of those old Schlitz bars. They have the Schlitz logo, used to be a Tide house, and we were very saddened to report that the bar was closing last year, but I don't know if this is a good thing or not. The bar and everything inside of it is going up for auction on Tuesday, July 20th. There's an auction. You can buy everything, including the bar, and like I said, everything inside of it. That's what the auction is all about on July 20th, Colin.
I've loved Southport Lanes. I definitely frequented there in my, you know, 20s. Great times. I don't know if they were so great that I would go after of a piece of memorabilia or literally the bar, you know, to sort of have in my home. But I do think that's cool that the opportunity is there for individuals to yet again spend more money at Southport Lanes. I feel like I gave a lot of money.
yeah, me too.
That money just went into glasses and bowling. Yeah, I'd be curious to see what stuff ends up in other locations and
yeah.
How we see some of our old nostalgia, old pieces of our memory in the future.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, some of the things that you can get in this auction, of course, the place itself, but you could get the pool tables, the balls and cues, the bowling lanes, because it has bowling lanes inside, the antique manual pin setters, the bowling balls and equipment, the Illinois Bell phone booth from the turn of the century, the actual bar, which dates back to 1922, the barware and the tap handles, the restaurant furniture, the famous Southport Lanes sign, the exterior signage, the full-service kitchen equipment, and the large quantity of memorabilia and collectibles that they have inside, all the trinkets and everything, and the TVs. I mean, so you could literally get everything if you wanted it, or I guess maybe you can just go piecemeal here and there.
I don't know. Do you got any scratch? You want to go in on something?
I always love the sign. I mean, the sign's pretty big, though. There's a couple of them, and there's some pretty big signs.
I don't imagine they sell like a single pin, do they?
I don't know if it gets that granular, but that's about all I bet we could pull together. Now, maybe a single pin from South Portland, and then we could share it, you know? We could share it. It'd be like the Stanley Cup.
Yeah. We could like bore a hole in it and drink out of it, I guess, if you wanted to, like at the bottom. So you can turn it upright. It looks like a pin, but if you turn it over, it turns into a cup. I'm with that.
Yeah, oh, good, good. Well, all right, Southport Lanes going on the auction block on July 20th. So if that's your jam, go ahead. If you want to get a pool table, if you want to get some bowling pins, if you want the whole thing, if you get the whole thing, invite us over, because we're good patrons, as we've established already on this program. Well, we have a good show for you today. We'll be talking about funding the Cook County Forest Preserves going forward, get an update on street vendors in Chicago, and we'll talk some ska music. We'll talk to one of the members of the legendary ska band from here in Chicago, Heavy Manners. Stay right there. No auctions for this show. It's all free. Forest Preserve System in Cook County is a local treasure in our backyard. There are 70,000 acres of green land to enjoy, but this land is in need of upkeep, and that upkeep costs money. There is a proposed referendum in the works right now that would appear on the November 2022 ballot that would ask Cook County residents if they wanted to raise property taxes as a way to stabilize the Forest Preserve's finances. The chief sponsor of this referendum is Cook County Commissioner Larry Sufferdin, and he joins us here today on Outside the Loop. Commissioner Sufferdin, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
You are welcome. So give us an idea here. What is going on with the Forest Preserves in terms of the finances? In other words, what's the current financial state of the Forest Preserves in Cook County right now?
Well, you know, one of the interesting trivia questions is, if you get elected a Cook County Commissioner, do you get elected to another position? And the answer is yes. I hold two positions. I'm a Cook County Commissioner, and then I'm a Forest Preserve Commissioner, and it's a separate government. And the Forest Preserve is a non-home rule unit, so it has very limited abilities to raise funds, and it's one of the smallest governments that's on the tax bill. So where we are today is that we've got this phenomenal asset, these 70,000 acres, and we need to maintain them. We need to expand. The law allows us to have up to 72,000 acres, and as Will Rogers once said, they aren't making land, so buy it now.
True.
What we need is additional funds to be able to pull all those pieces together. And because we're a non-home rule, the only way that we can legitimately do that is through a referendum and asking the people to do it. So we're starting early for a November 2022 referendum, but we're asking for a very small increase that would generate about $40 million extra a year. And with that, we are comfortable that we'll be able to acquire and restore more open lands. We'll be able to increase the programming, and we're certainly doing a lot of things with school kids these days, and we've got new campgrounds. We'll be able to help the Brookfield Zoo and the Botanic Garden and other issues. So that's the reason why we're starting now and asking people to consider voting yes in November of 2022.
So in terms of what this is going to look like on our tax bills, right? If this were to be put in place, we hear, oh my goodness, my property taxes are going up, and that's like code red for so many of us. We don't like that. But what does that look like? What would that look like on our tax bills, practically speaking?
So the Forest Preserve is less than 1% of the overall tax bill. So we're one of the, as I said, one of the smallest governments mm-hmm. that's there. The increase that we're talking about would be an increase of 0.25%, or about $20 a year to a home that has a $300,000 value.
So on our tax bills, that's what, like a couple of bucks probably?
Well, we're figuring it's, again, if your house is worth $300,000, you're talking $20 a year. So it's a couple bucks a month. And for people who have a house that's worth more, I think that you'll have to figure out it's about $7.30 per $100,000 valuation, what we're looking at. So it's not a huge amount of money, but especially during the pandemic, our visitorship has jumped to 40 million people visited the Forest Preserve. Now, many of them did it multiple times during this pandemic year, and that's because people wanted to be outside. They were on our trails. They were in canoes and kayaks. They were riding bicycles. They were running. They were having outdoor picnics and meeting people in the open air. And what we know, we have this great jewel, and when you fly into O'Hare, I always say it's beautiful to look down and see the emerald necklace that goes around the Chicago area of our forest preserves. And so what we want to do is make sure that they're there. We're about 105 years into the founding of the Forest Preserve movement. And what we want to do is make sure that 100 years from now, people will be talking about and using these forest preserves.
I love the forest preserves. I mean, like you said, during the pandemic, I was there with my kids a lot. It was great to be outside enjoying really the nooks and crannies of Cook County through the forest preserve system and those trails. They are awesome. In terms of what we're talking about here, the proposal is to increase property taxes a little bit, but are there other ideas that are in the works about maybe some other revenue streams besides increasing those property taxes?
Well, because we're a non-home rule unit, the only two ways that we can generate revenue are through property taxes and through fees that we collect. We are and try to maximize the fees that we can charge for camping and other things, but we also want to make them available to people. So the property tax is always going to be the main revenue source. The other things, you know, our golf courses are now managed by the old Billy Casper organization, and they're in much better shape than they've ever been. And, you know, we have huge number of rounds of golf being played on those courses, and that generates some money. But to get the kind of money we need to do the restoration work and to really stabilize this government, it's unfortunately just property tax.
And, you know, I'm just thinking out of the box here, trying to get creative. You know, I've seen solar panels just like all over the area, the Chicagoland area. I think solar is becoming more and more popular. I mean, are there any ideas in terms of, you know, maybe trying to save some money in terms of implementing solar panels on some of the forest preserve buildings or other like wind energy? I don't know. I'm just trying to get creative here. Any talk of any of that going forward?
Well, it's interesting. The talk is we don't have that many buildings and structures. Okay. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, maintenance sheds, but when you're out in the forest preserves, for the most part, there are picnic areas and there are picnic shelters and there are a few buildings. But one of the things that we do is we hold a significant amount of the stormwater, and as we deal with carbon exchange, the trees that we have are one of the most positive carbon exchanges that we have. And we as we try to lower our carbon footprint overall, we are looking for ways that the Forest Preserve maybe would have a chance to participate in that and monetize some of the benefits that we're giving, especially to those who are the polluters, if you will. But it's still early in stages in looking at that. But, you know, we are the gold standard for nature should be and the best way to preserve nature.
And thinking about how we, you know, best preserve this local treasure, this jewel of the forest preserves in Cook County, Okay, so maybe we need to do a tax increase here, albeit a very small tax increase. But politically speaking, how do you sell this? How do you sell this to other politicians? How do you sell this to the general public? Because sometimes we can't get past the phrase tax increase, and that might freak some of us out. So how do you go about selling this politically?
Well, absolutely. And as the Tribune in an editorial this week said, you know, when you look at the soda pop tax we had in Cook County, and you look at other property tax increases or income tax increases like the referendum that was on last November's ballot, you realize that the word tax scares people. That's why we're starting early, because one, we want them to know that we are a very, very small part of this, that we're only trying to raise $40 million across the entire county, which is really a small amount of money. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of it is very precise in that it's going into this land, which everybody values. But we need time to talk to people, and we need time for people to understand that this is, one, a well-run government. The Forest Preserve District is a very efficient, as we make the case, and that you're the first of what I expect will be many interviews that I'll be doing over the next year and a half. We are going to convince people basically one at a time that this is in their best interest and the best interest of their children and grandchildren to help preserve this land.
Well, it is great land. I mean, these 70,000 acres of forest preserves in Cook County are beautiful. We need to put forth something to make sure that they are continuing to be beautiful and that they have the proper upkeep. So I think this is really important. We'll look for this on the November 22 ballot. That is this referendum that would increase property taxes a little bit in order to fund the forest preserve system in Cook County. Larry Sufferdin is the chief sponsor of that referendum. He's also a Cook County commissioner. Commissioner Sufferdin, really appreciate the time. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
And thank you, and let's keep people outside the loop and in the forest preserves.
That is our new slogan. I appreciate that, Larry.
All right, have a great day.
Regulations prevent street vendors from preparing food at home or in the street. The intent here is to protect the health of the food consumer, but the result of this is some hardship placed on local food vendors. In 2017, on Outside the Loop number 559, I visited a shared commercial kitchen in the North Lawndale neighborhood. This kitchen provided a space for street vendors to prepare their food. For 5 years, this kitchen has been rented. However, recently, the organization, known as Cocina Compartida de Trabajadores Cooperativistas, purchased the kitchen, located at 3654 West 16th Street. This is a clip from that visit in 2017 when I dropped by the kitchen and spoke with Vicky Lugo, who is the vice president of the Street Vendors Association of Chicago. Take a listen. Here in the North Lawndale neighborhood, busy 16th Street, and right now it's calm inside of this Street Vendors Association of Chicago building here on 16th Street. I'm here with Vicky Lugo, who is the vice president of the Street Vendors Association of Chicago. Vicky, thanks for having us over here. So we're in this building. It's this standalone building. It's not huge, but definitely resembles a kitchen of some sort. What goes on in this building? Right now it's calm, but I know that a lot of people can come through here and it gets kind of hectic.
Yeah, so we are a nonprofit organization. We have membership meetings that we hold here in the kitchen, but our main job is to operate this kitchen where people come in, they prepare cold food products, which is right now what we're licensed for. Because we're a nonprofit, we don't have a lot of money, so we need to fundraise and look for resources to have the hood and other cooking equipment installed little by little. But right now, as of May 2nd of this year, we were licensed as a shared kitchen.
So let's talk about what happens here. So first of all, street vendors in Chicago. I feel like I've seen street vendors in certain neighborhoods for years in Chicago. However, only as of 2015 were street vendors officially deemed legal. So now legally, street vendors can go out, and what we're talking about here, people with carts and little stands that go on the street and sell food, now they are legally able to do that in the city of Chicago. But this has been going on for many, many years in the city.
Oh, yeah. Ever since Europeans came over, you know, everywhere in the world, street vending has been a part of life. Up until November, when the ordinance was approved or legalized, rather, vending was not allowed. So it was very difficult for many members and many vendors in the city because they would get harassed. They would get ticketed. They would have their merchandise thrown away. So they face a lot of struggles. And in 2015, when the ordinance was approved, it gave a lot of people hope. Because, I mean, when you go up against the city, when you create a draft ordinance, a proposal, and you have to lobby aldermen, you know, get their support, it's not easy. It's not an easy
task. No. And, you know, the food trucks went through something similar with their whole struggle of just getting licensed, then getting licensed to cook on the truck. And I've talked about food trucks on the show before, and it's like, well, wait a second. It's small business. It's encouraging innovation. Why wouldn't this city be behind that? And the same thing with street vendors. And for some who go out there and sell their food, I mean, it's a significant part of their income. It's how they make a living.
Right. A lot of these vendors, this is their only way of supporting their family. A lot of our members are either senior citizens or partially handicapped. Because of their immigration status, they cannot get a formal job anywhere in any kind of factory or any kind of industry. So they turn to this form of work because it gives them that flexibility to be able to provide for their families, work the hours that they need to, the days that they want to, and if they decide not to go to work that day, they don't do it. So it gives them that peace of mind, so to speak, to be able to provide for their families.
So the importance of this kitchen here in North Lawndale, when the vendors come here, they bring their carts, they come in this. I mean, this is a decent-sized space. We're in a large open room right now with stainless steel tables, and back there you've got more and sinks, and we're in a kitchen. They're preparing cold food here, but the importance of this place to the vendors, what is that?
This is their home. Our organization got our membership together. We came up with the money to pay for the lease, to pay for any build-out equipment as well, or any build-out work that needed to be done. Like, for example, we installed a ductwork, which the property had the furnace but did not have the ductwork installed. So we pitched in. We fixed that. We fixed the second bathroom as well. There was a lot of work that we all put in, and so this is our home. There are other kitchens in the city, but they don't cater to our specific needs, and they're not available the times that we need them, and the costs are extremely high, or too much for any vendor that lives on a day-by-day basis with the income that they make on a daily basis. This is very affordable. It's easily accessible to them, and so this is their home.
And what neighborhoods are we talking about? So we're here in North Lawndale. The vendors, what areas of the city are they covering?
Well, our membership is primarily based out of Little Village neighborhood, but
right next door.
Yeah. Not too far from here. But we also have members from Gage Park, from Back of the Yards neighborhood, and many areas in the city. This kitchen is not just for vendors from this area. It's open to any vendor that would like to. And I say vendor, I don't mean like a catering business, because there's other kitchens that can cater to their needs. Our kitchen is specifically for street vendors, although we have our doors open for anyone that would like to, but we specifically made it for our vendors, for vendors that sell their cut fruit, their corn on the cob, their potato chips, their tamales.
Are they making elotes in here?
Not yet, because okay. We don't have cooking equipment.
Oh, right. Okay. Those are delicious.
Yes,
those are delicious.
They are.
The street vending community, certainly in this area, has benefited from this space here in North Lawndale. And I know that you're working on getting your website all set up, and you've got a Facebook page that's in Spanish right now, but you are searchable, Street Vendors Association of Chicago. Again, Vicky Lugo is the vice president of that organization. Thanks for having us over to the nice space that you have here in North Lawndale, helping out a lot of entrepreneurs, street vendors, and small businesses here in Chicago. So thanks so much.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for your interest and your support in our work. I do want to mention that we will be holding a fundraiser in the coming months, so keep your eye out for that, so that we can get help with the cost of installing the cooking equipment and just any other costs that are associated with running a kitchen. So,
and that clip from Outside the Loop, show number 559 from 2017, when I visited the Shared Kitchen in North Lawndale at 3654 West 16th Street. The Street Vendors Association of Chicago, online at streetvendorschi.org. They recently spun off this into this co-op called Shared Kitchen of Cooperative Workers, and they bought the kitchen at 3654 West 16th Street in North Lawndale, where I visited in 2017. Great update to this story that is continuing to unfold, and I know this is really helpful for all of those hardworking street vendors across Chicago. When we think of Chicago music history, many of us probably default to jazz or blues or even house music, but the ska genre of music has a rich history in the city. Hillel Frankel is a member of the band Heavy Manners. Maybe you've heard of him as Frankie Hill. That was the stage name. He does vocals, saxophone, keyboards. He does it all. And they are a trailblazing ska band from right here in Chicago. Today, he joins us from Nashville. Frankie, Hillel, whoever you are, welcome to Outside the Loop.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Thank you.
Great to have you here. So you've done a lot. The band Heavy Manners, what year did you get started? So
Heavy Manners got started in 1980, and maybe even the first rehearsals happened in late 79. We had met, Kate had become friends with a DJ named Jimmy Robinson, a reggae DJ. We started up kind of rehearsals meetings at a coach house on Seminary, by Seminary in Belmont, not too far from where Tuts was located at the time, and kind of started our rehearsals just at the time that Ronald Reagan was becoming president, which influenced our political positions and kind of our outspokenness,
yeah.
In the world of ska and reggae, yes.
Yeah, it influenced other people to do the same, I'm sure.
Right, it was very, very activist political rock and roll and ska culture at the time.
Yeah, so let's talk about ska. So you know, I always think like, okay, I know it when I hear it. You know, I hear the horns, I hear the, like, you know, the upbeat music, usually. But if you had to define it for those of us who don't know what ska music is, what is ska?
Well, Scott was kind of it rose out of Blue Beat, which was kind of a bit of the Jamaican interpretation of R&B and soul, as they were hearing it coming back to them from Motown and from all the early soul groups of the 60s and maybe of the 70s. And if you listen to the early Bob Marley recordings, they're kind of sped up a little bit. And that's it's more like a skank with a sped up reggae. And that was the origins of it in Jamaica.
And, you know, we think about the history of that. I mean, it was here in Chicago in the 80s, but it wasn't really like my first memories of seeing ska live, definitely in the 1990s. And like for a moment there, you know, people were, I feel like in the 90s, it was all about ska. That was like the next big thing. That was like mid to late 1990s. I feel like that was pretty big here in Chicago.
Yeah, there was a, I think it may have been the third wave. There's lots of waves. There was the first wave that came out of Jamaica, and it went to England, and it bands like, you know, the Specials, Madness, Selector, and the English Beat, and who we toured with, they all came out of that first or second wave in the UK, influenced by the Jamaican groups. And in the US, we became influenced by the British ska bands. And, you know, Heavy Manners started in our first songs we rehearsed were Twist and Crawl by English Beat, Mirror in the Bathroom, that kind of stuff. And the Specials, of course, we played Monkey Men. All these songs we were covering, the British versions of ska. We also played reggae classics along with it and started writing our own reggae songs to join with the ska. So we were a little bit different than a lot of the bands that were straight up fast-paced ska, kind of punk ska. We were rooted in reggae music.
Let's talk about this. Yesterday, your 1982 single, again, I'll say that your 1982 single, amazing,
right,
called Flamin' First, was re-released. Tell us about that.
So we went back to the record, and Kate Fagan, the singer, the lead singer and main songwriter on a lot of these great singles, Kate lives in New Orleans now, and she's been making music down in New Orleans with some great New Orleans players. And she went to one of the people she's been working with in the studio and asked them to see if they could work on the track a little bit. So they worked mainly on the mastering side to make it deeper and rounder and sound a little bit better than it did maybe in 1982 with some of the new technology.
Mm-hmm.
And we came back with a mix that we really liked it and a version of Flamin' First that we thought would be great to reissue, especially as it seems like, once again, ska is permeating into the music. You know, it's kind of more mixed in with other forms of music right now than it is a new wave of ska, but it just felt like it would be a good time to release this song. Plus, the theme of the song, Flamin' First, having, you know, things be the first time and just, you know, the excitement of that is in this track, and that's really timeless.
And, I mean, it's a big time, kind of, for Heavy Manners. You've got the re-release of Flamin' First, but also you are featured in two new books that are out right now all about ska music. So these are cool. One's In Defense of Ska, and the other's sort of like this oral history of ska music.
Yes, we have a big feature. And one of the things the book talks about, you know, we opened some Peter Tosh shows, and Peter, through Donald Kinsley, who was his guitar player at the time, they became interested in producing some tracks for Heavy Manners. And we were able to, actually through the work of Linda Mensch as well, a great Chicago music attorney, we were able to set up sessions with Peter Tosh in Chicago at CRC. And to everyone's, to most people's knowledge, this is the only time Peter produced a band. And
wow,
yeah, created songs outside of his own work. And so Peter came to Chicago and stayed in a hotel like the Travelodge on Michigan Avenue, and we were tasked to pick him up in the morning and drive him and in a big plume of smoke to the studio, to CRC, you know. And there was generally quite a bit of ganja in the vicinity in order to facilitate these sessions, but we had amazing sessions with Peter and guitar player Don Kinsey, who, of course, Don played on a lot of the great Bob Marley albums as well. And Donald is a Chicago guy. He has the Kinsey Report.
Right, right.
And that's his blues band. But he was on many of the iconic Bob Marley recordings, and then went on to produce the Mama Africa album for Peter Tosh, which had Peter's hit Johnny Be Good. And so Donald and Peter came to the studio, worked with Heavy Manners on four songs in 1983. And those are part of a compilation that's available on the streaming services right now. That's kind of how we ended up in a lot of the books as well. We did have Flamin' First did reach number one on a lot of college stations back in the day. And it did have quite a bit of airplay. But we also kind of evolved into this band that we worked with Peter Tosh. We toured with a lot of reggae bands. We did a lot of things that were beyond just the spectrum of what might have been a local band or a local ska band.
Is there right now, do you think, any kind of ska revival? I know in Chicago there's a new compilation coming out that features ska music, and these books are coming out. Are we looking at some kind of revival here when it comes to ska tunes?
Well, it seems to always live on in Chicago, and a lot of it has to do with Chuck Wren and Jump Up Records. He's kind of been documenting the whole thing and releasing recordings on so many great Chicago and Midwest ska bands, and he's had a number of compilations that we've been involved in. And I think just, so much of music has to do with having cool little labels around to put out the music of the bands that are making the music and small promoters that help put together shows. And Chuck has been instrumental in a lot of that. And it's really facilitated ska to keep going in Chicago and to keep regenerating itself. And, there's so much cool music happening coming out of Chicago right now in so many different genres. I would hesitate to say that ska is the prime genre or anything like that, but it's definitely living and it's definitely moving forward.
I know that sporadically Heavy Manners has reunited over the years, but you're kind of spread out now. We're talking to you from, you're in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
You said Kate, the vocalist, is in New Orleans. Any idea or any notion of maybe doing a reunion now that we can get back into some venues and enjoy live music again? Is that maybe on the horizon?
Yes, that's, we're working on, we're hoping for 2022. And we did play a couple of great shows in 2018. We opened for the English Beat at the Metro, which was like a rerun of the show we did, back in 1982 and 3 with the English Beat.
Yeah.
In fact, the billboard and the marquee at the Metro looked exactly the same. It's the same marquee.
It's the same thing, right? Yeah, same marquee.
It was like somebody just recreated the bill, and there we were. And the show was great. It was packed house, totally fun. So we had some terrific shows. Unfortunately, sadly, in 2018, Jim Robinson had stopped performing with us back in 2010. We would do like a one reunion show a year, sometimes at Beat Kitchen and a few different venues. And Jimmy sadly passed away from cancer in 2018. And at the end of the year, around Thanksgiving time, we did a tribute to him at the Beat Kitchen. We have been playing, so it was very bittersweet. But we do intend to do a show in 2022. Our bassist has been Joe Thomas for the last 10 years, and Joe is a monster bass player. He's played with Herbie Hancock and a bunch of other great people.
Wow.
So we hope to and we also play with Kevin Smith, who's in the Chicago Cats, who's very active in the Chicago scene as well. He's the second keyboardist and backup vocalist for us.
So probably 2022?
Yes, we are hoping that can happen.
All right.
Obviously, we would have loved to have done something the last year or two, but that was not in the cards for everybody.
Right. That is true. Well, hey, I mean, this is really cool that you are continuing on here in music and keeping that ska flame alive and looking to 2022 for little reunion show with Heavy Manners. If we want to check you out online, where can we go?
Well, first of all, you should go to the streaming services and hear the 2021 fresh mix of Flamin' First, which is available now as of yesterday on all the streaming services. You could also go to Heavy Manners on Spotify or Apple Music, and you'll find a compilation album of the full, really the full recorded output of Heavy Manners back from the early 80s, which is 15 songs, which includes the three or four tracks we did with Peter Tosh. And a lot of great recordings and the other singles like Taking the Queen to Tea and Hometown Ska, a lot of great songs on there. So you could just search Heavy Manners. You'll find us on Facebook as well. I'm not sure if we're Instagram ready quite yet.
Yeah, I say that all the time. I don't know if I'm Instagram ready, but, you know, I do it anyway. All right. Well, Hillel Frankel, also known as Frankie Hill. Vocals, saxophone, keyboards for the band Heavy Manners. Hey, great talking to you today. Enjoy yourself down there in Nashville, and best of luck with everything going forward, man.
Yeah, thanks, man. You know, I'm still playing here a little bit, and I'm managing some artists and doing legal for a bunch of producers and writers, and just hanging in there.
Yes, the rap party for Outside the Loop show number 769, where Colin and I take the segment here and recap the show, expand on some topics, offer some takeaways, and Larry Sufferdin. By the way, Larry Sufferdin, Commissioner Larry Sufferdin, do we have to put him on the OTL payroll? Is he part of the ad team now? Is he part of the PR strategy division? With the logo that he's coming up with, the slogan.
Yeah, I mean, I like that. I like that a lot. What stuck with me is just $7 and, well, roughly approximately $7.35 per $100,000 that your home is valued at.
Yes, so that's it, right? I mean, hey, I'm in.
I would pay per whatever. I don't know what the evaluation of my home. It's more than $100,000, my home, mm-hmm. but... whatever multiples of $7.35 that I am responsible for, I am just going to say right now that I would pay that.
It's not bad. It's not bad. I mean, I think for a lot of us, you're looking like in the $20 to $30 range, probably, I would think, somewhere around there.
It's 11% of the county in terms of size. It's crazy.
I love, and I was talking about this with the commissioner, I love the forest preserves, especially... Like we were talking about during the pandemic, you know, everyone's so cooped up and you couldn't go anywhere. So to go outside and to get to a forest preserve, and there are so many trails and tucked away spots in the forest preserve system, was it always warm? No, not at all. But it was still fun to explore. And, you know, that's a treasure. And we should definitely, you know, I think work to preserve that. And the whole tax increase thing, I think... I mean, yeah, nobody loves to pay taxes. I understand it, but it's also part of the deal, right? I mean, we have to pay a little bit to get some things that we all enjoy, and we all share that burden. I understand. And I just think that, you know, when we talk about, okay, maybe bumping up taxes a little bit, I can live with that. And I think we live in a society today where it's like we can't say that. And people are always like, well, you have to be against the taxes and against the taxes. And yeah, I get it, right? I don't want to like just keep, you know, giving my money away to stuff. But this is important. And, you know, that's part of the deal. It's part of citizenship, I suppose. So in that sense, I'm on board. And look, we can all enjoy it, right?
Yeah, I think there's a rightful sense of skepticism because the history is not great with regards to property taxes as being like a catch-all for paying for stuff, you know, but this is a targeted focused spend and it's a very small spend. And it just like, especially in a unprecedented moment, like we are still sort of in and we found ourselves in last year, we basically have a national park in Cook County in terms of its size. And it's, I think, you know, he used the term gold standard in terms of like taking care of nature. That's just something you do not want to mismanage, you know? And I think that this seems like a reasonable way to make sure that 100 years from now, it's still going to be around.
Hey, did you or do you like ska music?
Yeah, I skanked back in the day. I skanked.
You did the skank?
Yeah. Do you know how to skank?
Doesn't it involve like your, it's like you're running in place kind of?
Yeah, but you're not in a true runner's form. You know, you're bending down a lot more and you're throwing your hands out a lot more. It's very exaggerated.
I remember when, and I talked a little bit about this with Hillel, you know, in college, I got to Loyola in Chicago in 1998, and ska was like one of the things that was all the rage. And I remember I saw some ska shows, you know, and people were skanking. They were doing that dance. The other thing that was big in like the late 90s, early 2000s was, what was it called? It was like swing dancing. Do you remember that craze in late 90s, early 2000s? You had these like swing dance bands and people were doing all these crazy moves. And I remember walking into a show once, a swing dance show.
The Cherry Poppin' Daddies? Jump, jump.
The Cherry Poppin' Daddies. I believe jump, they came to jump. Loyola. I think they did.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a hot minute.
I know. And people are doing these dances. And I'm thinking to myself, where did you learn how to do all these dances? I felt like everyone was choreographed. And I walked in not knowing any of the moves, not knowing anything in terms of how to do this, whatever this was. People are like picking up other people and swinging them around. I was totally lost. But then I think by the following year or two, that was all gone. Did you ever go to a swing dance show?
No, I did not go to a swing dance show. I mean, in high school, because it was that time, you know, some of the performances that I was in, I was a theater kid, like involved swing dancing, but they weren't ska. And when you went to a ska show, at least a ska like punk show, it was not the same thing. Those were better times. And I truly hold dear some of those ska shows that I went to and saw bands, not from Chicago, mind you, but really great, great acts. I will always remember Streetlight Manifesto at the Pound in San Francisco. God, what a show that was. So good.
Colin out there doing the skank, dancing away. Maybe, who knows, in the future, you can go back and you can see the Heavy Manners when they hopefully reunite in 2022. You can teach me the moves, Colin.
Sure, we can do that. We'll make a segment out of it.
works great on radio. Teaching Mike Steven how to do certain ska moves. We'll do a segment on it.
I saw something. Hold on, parent to parent real quick. I saw something that I thought was excellent. This cat had his kids write down the instructions on how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. The kids, like, they didn't write super specific exact instructions. And so he sat them down and then actually like went through the process based on the instructions that they laid out. Like, you know, put the jelly on the bread, put the, you know, it never said open the jelly, put the spoon into the jelly jar, take out the jelly and spread it evenly across. You know, there's sort of like these layers of how specific you want to get with your instructions. And it was such an interesting learning technique or learning exercise for the kids as they like went back to the drawing board and rewrote the instructions on just how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich so that you're super specific. Everything is there. Everything's accounted for. And what you just said made me think of that and that how that's a very interesting teaching technique.
So you're going to have to say, okay, hunch down in a 65-degree pose, kick your legs out, throw your hands up in the air, like so, but you know, you're going to have to be very specific with it.
Elbows at 90 degrees, hands out in front of you, rotating the wrist from left to right, 30 degrees and negative 30 degrees. Yeah, all that stuff.
Okay, hold on. Okay, I was doing it. All right, we better stop right now because I'm dancing here in the home studio, and I'm afraid I'm going to kick something over or break something.
Well, as soon as I teach you, you can teach your mom, and you guys can skank together.
That's great. Yeah, my parents would just love to get down to some ska tunes. You know,
I know your mom would. I don't know about your dad. Your dad probably he's more like salsa, right?
He's more like salsa. If by salsa you mean classical, then there you go. Little insight into the musical stylings of my dad. Colin, we're done. That's it. The wrap party. I want you to get home safely from Michigan. And, you know, you just have a fantastic week.
Bye, Mike.
And that's the wrap party for Outside the Loop Show, number 769. Rap party. And that just about does it. Outside the Loop show number 769. It's all wrapped up just for you. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. Thanks to Colin for producing. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for being our engineer. Have a great week. I'll talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop on 720 WGN.